RadioMD.com. It's your life, your health, it's your show. You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, starring Dr. Michael Roizen, MD.
And this is Dr. Mike. I told you we had a sensational show today lined up, and we do, and one of the reasons it's so sensational is this guest we have, Joe Marchant, is the author of Decoding the Heavens, shortlisted for the Royal Society Prize. She has a PhD in genetics and medical microbiology and has written on everything from the future of genetic engineering to underwater archaeology for The New Scientist, Nature, The Guardian, and Smithsonian. Appeared on numerous shows. Her new book, Cure, it's a wonderful book. It is a book you should read because it is the journey into the science of mind over body. And she's here with us today, calling in from London. Joe, thank you very much. The book Cure, how did you happen to call it Cure?
Well, Cure is really a description of a concept, an idea, if you like, this idea that the mind can heal us. And people get very fascinated with this idea. It's a very controversial question. You get sort of claims of miracle cures on one side. You have skeptics on the other side saying the mind plays no role at all in health. So the Cure is really encapsulating this idea that I wanted to investigate by really digging deep into the scientific research and finding out what the science really tells us about what the mind can do for our health.
Now, how did you happen to get into this? I mean, you write so beautifully. How did you happen to learn how to write?
How did I learn how to write? I don't know. I just try and write from the heart, if you like. If I interview a scientist and I'm excited about an idea, or if I interview a patient and I'm moved by their story, I suppose I just try and think about what is it that moves me? Why do I care about this thing that I'm trying to write, and really try and convey that on the page? And obviously you put the facts and figures in as well, but for me it's really about the story and being moved by something. And it's up to readers to judge whether they like the results or not, but that's the approach I usually take.
Well, I do like the results. The book Cure is a fast read, fascinating, great stories. Let's talk about one of the stories that occurred at the Cleveland Clinic, which is where I work, so that's why I'm bringing it up, and shows a placebo response, which obviously you can get a total lot of health from what we call placebo responses. So this is a study of cardiac surgery, and the Weinberg procedure was a procedure where they would implant coronary arteries, not hook them up like they do now, but this is, they would cut little, if you will, perforated holes in the pericardium, and you'd stick a vessel through there and hope that the vessel would generate abnormal or collaterals off of it that would provide blood flow to the rest of the heart. Turns out that when it got studied scientifically, there was no increase in blood flow, yet 65% of people got a cure of their chest pain. And the only reason that we know about this is they did something in that day that you couldn't do now, because we need now get all kinds of approvals from patients before we operate on them. But in that day, they randomized them to either the Weinberg procedure or just opening the chest and closing it with no surgery on the heart being done. And the incredible thing is, opening and closing was as effective as was the actual Weinberg procedure. And that led to, if you will, that placebo-controlled study, which still got 65% of people were benefited from it, lack of pain, still got, if you will, did away with the Weinberg procedure. So, Joe, is this an example of a placebo response, or is it something else?
Yeah, this is a classic example of the placebo response. So it's the idea that people can receive treatment and often they will feel better even if it turns out that that treatment was fake. It had no active ingredient at all. And often we think of like pills, you know, sugar pills as a placebo, but it can be any kind of treatment. So surgery, as you mentioned, you can even have placebo acupuncture, for example, where you might put needles in the wrong places and they don't fully penetrate the skin. And it's it's traditionally been thought of as a bit of an illusion, you know, so often skeptics will say, well, you know, a lot of people will get better anyway with time, you know, regardless of what treatment they received, or maybe these people just think they're better even when they're not, or perhaps they're just saying they're in less pain to sort of please their doctor. And all of those things undoubtedly do occur, but what scientists are finding now that I think is really fascinating is that as well as all of that, there's something else going on, which is that when people respond to placebo, you see measurable biological changes in the brain, especially in the body, which are very similar to the changes that are caused by drugs. So if you take a placebo painkiller, for example, that can trigger the release of endorphins in the brain, these natural pain-relieving chemicals, which opioid drugs like morphine and heroin are designed to mimic. So when you take a placebo and your pain is eased, you haven't imagined that. It's not all in your mind. It's actually occurred through exactly the same biological mechanism that a drug would work through.
And is that, if you will, that mind over body, how common is that, and do you have to believe in it? In other words, do you have to believe, if you're going to have the sham acupuncture and get a placebo response, you have to believe it's in the right spot or it's going to work? Or is there any, can you predict who will be a placebo responder for specific treatment before they start the process?
There's a lot of research going into exactly this question right now, partly because drug companies want to understand it so that they can perhaps eliminate placebo responders from their trials, because they're finding it very difficult to get new painkillers through trials at the moment because placebo responses are so strong. And of course, if we can understand placebo responses, perhaps we can start to harness those to benefit patients. It turns out that placebo responses are really tricky. They change, you know, depending on the circumstances. You can have 0% of people responding or 100% of people responding. It varies in different countries. You get different proportions of people responding. The same person might respond on one day and not on another. And it seems to come down to the fact that it's nothing to do with the actual placebo. There's nothing in a sugar pill. It's not going to do anything. It comes down to what a placebo means to you. So you're absolutely right. Your expectation does seem to be quite a key ingredient, not the only ingredient, but one of the ingredients. So generally in trials, if people are engaged with their treatment, they're optimistic about it, they have high expectations for it, they're more likely to have a placebo response. On the other hand, if you're told that a sugar pill is going to create a headache rather than ease it, it can have that response. If you're skeptical about a treatment, then you're probably less likely to have a placebo response. So it's all down to the meaning. Having said that, however, there is, although there is one class of placebo responses that work through these sort of conscious expectations and beliefs, there is another thing going on, sorry to complicate things, which is called a learned association. So something else that happens with the body is that if you take a pill, such as a painkiller, several times, your body learns the physiological response to that pill. If you later take a fake pill, you'll automatically have that same physiological response. And that kind of response has got nothing to do with your expectation. Doesn't matter what you know about the pill, you can know it's a sugar pill and you will still have that response to it. So placebo responses seem to be a combination of these two things. One that has to do with your conscious expectation and one that has to do with just your body learning the response to that particular pill.
So we have a learned response, and with the learned response, you secrete the same things and your brain shows the same changes as in the, quote, if you will, the placebo response. Is that right? The expectation
response. Yeah, that's right. And so the expectation-driven responses tend to be strongest for symptoms we experience, things like pain, nausea, fatigue, depression. They don't seem to be so effective for the sort of basic physiological processes of disease. But these learned responses affect all aspects of physiology that are controlled by the brain, so the cardiovascular system, hormone levels, and in particular immune responses. There's some very interesting work at the moment looking at whether we can learn the response to immunosuppressant drugs, for example, in organ transplant patients, people with autoimmune disease, allergies.
When we come back, Joe, I've got to break off now. When we come back after the break, we're going to talk more about CURE with Joe Marchand.
Your You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, starring Michael Roizen, MD.
RadioMD.com.
Here's Dr. Mike.
And this is Dr. Mike. We're lucky enough to be talking with Joe Marchant, M-A-R-C-H-A-N-T. It's JoeMarchant.com is your website. But the book that we're talking about is a wonderful book called Cure, C-U-R-E, A Journey into the Science of Mind Over Body. It's published by Crown and available on Amazon as usual, and probably at many of the other bookstores too. The Science of Mind Over Body. Joe, what I want to get into now, we talked a little bit, by the way, in the earlier part, for those of you just turning in, about the placebo response and the importance of the placebo response and how it can be both a learned response and an expected response, and how those things actually change what's going on in your brain. Let me go into the field that Mehmet Oz and has tried to convince me, if you will, is the next area where we will have a breakthrough. And I've been a little skeptical on this just because I haven't seen it yet. And that is what he calls and what you call energy medicine. And if you will, Reiki is one of the examples of it, where people can transport their energy to someone next to them. And the studies with Reiki, as you point out beautifully in this book, and for those of the listeners, this is a really balanced, wonderful scientific treatment of this subject. But you point out that there is no better result than placebo with this. But that doesn't mean it doesn't work. It just means that placebos also work well. So talk to us about Reiki, would you?
Yeah, so my perspective on it is that generally in trials, you can compare Reiki healing against sort of fake healing where you've just got an actor who's kind of going through the motions, pretending to do it, perhaps while they're counting backwards in their head to make sure they don't inadvertently send any healing thoughts. You can compare the two and they are no different. But where I think that perhaps the conventional view on this has got it slightly wrong is that usually it's assumed from that, oh, Reiki's no better than placebo, therefore it can't help anybody, it's worthless, let's throw it out. But actually, alternative medicines like Reiki and acupuncture can be very effective inducing large placebo responses that, as I've said, can trigger these biological changes in the brain that are very effective at easing patient symptoms, and in some trials can actually be better than conventional medicine. So things like pain, where drugs aren't that good, actually, but chronic pain, and there are downsides like side effects and addiction, you can have a situation where even though something is working no better than placebo, it's actually doing better than the drugs. So I would be cautious about alternative therapies that are based on sort of theoretical frameworks that aren't scientific. I don't think they are working in the way the therapists claim, because you can do a fake version of that therapy and it's just as good. But I do think they incorporate a lot of elements. So there's the expectation and the ritual of it probably really adds to that. There's also the social support and interaction with the therapist, which is another element that's been shown to be very important in placebo responses. The better the interaction with the person who's treating you, the better the patient outcomes usually. So I think all of these things are very important. And so if you're suffering from chronic pain, fatigue, depression, nausea, these symptoms, I think it could be useful. Just be wary of what the therapist is telling you about why it's working. What I think we really need to be doing is understanding those elements, those human elements of care, and studying them in an evidence-based way and working out, well, how can we incorporate those into conventional care rather than outsourcing all of this care to, you know, alternative therapists? Let's get that into our sort of main conventional medicine alongside all those other physical drugs and treatments so we get the best of both worlds.
Yeah, and as you can tell, since I'm from the Cleveland Clinic, we and do run the Wellness Institute and the Center for Integrative Medicine, and we use a lot of Chinese therapies as well as holistic psychotherapy and a lot of the alternative therapies you put in the book. We are trying to do the same thing at the clinic, which is using them together. Let me talk to you about, do you think there will end up being a genetic test for placebo responders, if you will? Will we learn just like we are getting more precision, what we call precision medicine, finding out that, for example, lung cancer and colon cancer and prostate cancer and breast cancer have some similarities genetically that allow you to treat them better. Will we also find that out with placebo responders, that these people who have this genetics will respond much better, whether it's for pain or for something else?
Well, there are already some studies that are starting to identify genes that partly predict who is going to respond to placebo. What isn't really known yet is whether those genes will predict whether you would respond to any placebo or whether it's going to be different for pain, different for depression, different for Parkinson's disease, because there are different mechanisms behind placebo responses in all of these different conditions. There's not just one placebo response. There are many, as the researchers like to say. But it does seem that certainly your genes are going to be one thing that influences that. There are also some interesting studies looking at personality, which in turn might be partly affected by genes. So it used to be assumed that if you responded to placebo, you were probably neurotic, suggestible, but the researchers are finding that it's actually the opposite. It's optimistic, engaged people who are most likely to benefit from placebo responses, whereas neurotic, hostile people are actually least likely to respond.
Now, have you, and I don't want to give away too much of the book, have you had a chronic disease and used this in your own practice? I mean, use this for yourself? You've got some great stories in the book of people who have, obviously, but how about for use personally?
I'm lucky enough that I don't personally have a chronic disease. I did take placebos just for a headache to see what would happen, and the headache did go, but obviously my personal experience doesn't tell you anything in itself, but there are trials suggesting that you can sometimes take placebos and know it's a placebo and they'll still work. Mostly, though, I wanted to explore this by talking to patients who had been through different experiences with disease and tried these different approaches. So I met a woman who fractured her spine, for example, and had fake surgery, which healed the pain for her. I met another woman who had suffered from irritable bowel syndrome for more than 20 years until she took part in a trial with honest placebos where she knew it was a placebo, and that worked for her. I met a man, a kidney transplant patient, who was using learned associations in a trial to try and suppress his immune rejection of that kidney to try and reduce drug doses. So I talked to a lot of different people in a lot of different situations, and then I try and link that with the trial results. So I'll tell personal stories and then also tell you how that fits with the scientific evidence.
Well, if you wanted to guess 5 years in the future, will we be doing just like we do a gene array on breast cancer, will we be doing that on maybe finding out the placebo or the pain responses at the same time? Is that where pharmaceutical companies are going, do you think?
Possibly, yeah. I mean, I really do hope that we will be able to start incorporating these individual elements, because attitude.
Joe, let me stop you there. Let me stop you there and just say the book is Cure, CURE, JoeMarchant.com. Cure is a marvelous book. Get it.